It's time for another edition of Writers Roundtable, the forum where we discuss some of the burning issues in sports. Today, we delve into West Indies cricket, or more specifically, the wars plaguing West Indies cricket. In recent times, it has been a dismal story. The West Indies test team just folded in 3 days in India. The T20 team embarrassingly lost a series against Nepal. And the list goes on. I'm Hayden Gill, your host. And at the round table, we've got a team of writers. Philip Spooner, Sean Green, Jonte Coppin. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so gentlemen, first up, let's assess the test match against India. Not really pleasant memories. West Indies failed to score 200 in either innings. You know, that has been a very regular occurrence this year. Philip, if we can start with you, I mean, where did it go so wrong?
Depends, huh? With the bat and the ball, we drop a few catches. Everything was wrong. I think preparation is key. And you can't turn up in India in half a week and expect really to play good test cricket. The preparation time needed to be more. You know, we were in Nepal playing against, we were in Sharjah playing against Nepal, and even though none of the players in India were in that squad, I think they were a little short on preparation, if you be honest. You need more time. I mean, England is going to the Ashes, and they'll be there a very long time before the first test match is played. The Australian players are playing four-day cricket in preparation for the Ashes. The India A team had a three-match series against Australia A before they played us. Jarrell got 100 in that series. He made 100 in test match. You know, KL Rahul got 100 in that series. He made 100 in test match. Just when we thought we could bowl them out and beat New Zealand, well, we weren't. Our two best bowlers for the year went down. I don't know who approved their fitness to go on the test tour, and then they didn't even get on the plane, but that's exactly what happened, and we paid the price really for poor preparation. As you said, we don't make a lot of runs. We haven't made 300 runs for the year. We didn't make 300 in Pakistan. We didn't make 300 against Australia and the Caribbean, and we didn't make 300. We didn't even make 200 in test match. So we were very bad, and India were good. And when one team is very bad and the other team is good, the result obviously is only going to be one direction.
Okay, Sean?
To add to Philip's point, I think even beyond the preparation, I think even if we had more preparation time, I don't think the result would have been much different. I think there's a chasm between the two teams. I mean, look at where West Indies, we're rated on what, 8, 9, something like that. India, they're rated going 2. I think the only team that had success in India recently was New Zealand, I believe it was. So what I'm saying is that even the best teams in the world, with preparation, it's just hard to beat India at home. And not having preparation, the adequate preparation, that only compounded the situation. It's really sad to when they look at the makeup of the team. I mean, in the West Indies, the cupboard is bare. No Craig Brathwaite are opening. What Philip mentioned, we haven't scored over 300 in a while. So obviously, the batting is a major problem. I don't think the bowling is that bad, but the batting. And we've lost Craig Brathwaite, the most experienced batsman that we've had in a while, but Craig has lost form. We've gone back to Brandon, Taj Naraini and Chanderpaul. So when I look at the selection of the team, I'm not faulting the selectors really, but me, I think the cupboard is that bare, especially when it comes to batting. Okay.
Jordan?
I think they summed up perfectly. I think this is just another reminder of where West Indies cricket is. I think we're just not a very good nation. Well, we're not a very good group of nations. There's not much in the cupboard. We don't produce good batsmen at all. I mean, I saw a stat that we have the lowest batting average of all test playing nations since 2020, and that includes Zimbabwe and teams that we would mockingly refer to as minnows. So it just shows you that we're not good at cricket, and we're just not producing cricketers of the required standard.
There's a school of thought that perhaps we made a mistake in that first test match by batting first after winning the toss. I mean, how do you feel? Do you think that would have made a difference?
Fielding would only have helped the gate receipts, probably, in terms of maybe India would have batted for a day and a half to allow their batsmen to get hundreds and then bowl us out twice. But I think the result would have been the same. It's just the timing of how long the test match would take, to be honest.
Sean, you touched on the composition of the team. Are we getting it right in that regard? I mean, we've lost a couple of, well, or we didn't pick a couple of experienced players. Huh? Mm-hmm. I don't know what your thoughts on if we're getting it right in terms of that team selection.
Yes and no. No in that you look at the results. I think 2025 has been, from my memory, has been the worst year for West Indies cricket so far. We lost practically 8-love to Australia at home after we drew with Pakistan at the top of the year. We lost 1-0 to India, and then we go to New Zealand of all places.
Bangladesh before
that. Yes, and Bangladesh. Slip Nepal in there. That's not Test cricket, but it's still West Indies brand. Yeah. I mean, I cannot think of a worse year.
Women didn't qualify for the World Cup.
And the women, not even talking about the women. I mean, I think this has been the worst year for West Indies cricket. I think that in the Australian series, they made some changes, especially batting work. Very surprising. You drop Brandon Hodge, for example. You drop the Dominicans. I think Brandon Hodge scored 120 against England last year. He's one of the few batsmen who was fairly consistent. He didn't have a good tour of Pakistan, but no one did really with the bat. So are we getting it right? No. Initially he said yes, only because of how beardy cupboard is. I mean, there really
aren't much else to
fit. Not much else, but I would not have dropped Brandon Hodge. Certainly Kevin Hodge, sorry. I would not have dropped him, for sure.
Philip, interesting enough, since Darren Sammy has taken over as head coach in all of the formats, both the white ball and the red ball. We've seen a pattern where a number of players who were not considered regulars in Test cricket in recent years have made their way back into the Test team, right? Having played with white ball cricket a lot recently. Is that a step in the right direction? Do you agree with that thought process?
Start your day with the Nation News ePaper. Enjoy the accessibility and new upgrades of the Nation News ePaper daily, whether on our mobile app or Nation News website. For added convenience, use our new audio read feature, which reads the newspaper aloud, or look in the archives for any publications you may have missed. Get your news, your time, your way with the Nation News ePaper and enjoy our new upgrades.
When it comes to Darren Sammy, I always have to be very cautious how I respond. I worked with him very closely for 10 years when he was captain. So there's a bit of there's still a bit of loyalty.
Understandable.
To Darren, I work as his media consultant, and he was a good student as captain. I think we need to separate red ball cricket from white ball cricket. And let me explain what I mean. We're looking at matchups, and we're looking at a lot of data for white ball cricket, which is relevant, right? Matchups work in white ball cricket. When a left-hander that likes to hit cold corner comes in, you bring your off-spinner on and force him to hit offside. You see that with Pooran all the time, and when you force Pooran to go in that direction, you tend to get him all limiting. When you come here to Pooran, he goes that way and he murders you. That's white ball matchup cricket, white 50-over cricket, and T20 cricket. Test cricket is different. You've got all day to do a job in Test cricket. You don't got to go nowhere fast. Matchups don't really work. And tell me, if a fella has 4 for 25 in a spell, you ain't going to take him off just because a batsman who's good against him comes into bat, you're going to let him go and try and get him out. I think we've taken the white ball mentality and the thinking into red ball cricket. I think it was a subtle criticism of Craig during the Australia series when we spoke at length about pace at which you scores, this ridiculous thing called strike rate in Test cricket, you know. It took Craig the same amount of time to keep England hanging on the cross in Barbados as it did to take Brian Larratt to make 400. Craig made 150 and 60 not out, but he drew the Test match during COVID. So strike rate in Test cricket can't really be a major criteria for selection. I mean, you want people to score at a decent rate. You don't want them to bat all day and make 10. But if you're instituted these things as part of your makeup for Test cricket, then you're going to struggle. We might be scoring at a faster strike rate, but we're only making 150. So we're making 150 and 40 overs in the game, and the game is done. India come and they bat quite well. India scored at 3.6 which is a healthy strike rate in Test cricket, and they won the match in 3 days. The game was over on the third day, so I don't know what strike rate, what help strike rate is to us. So I think they have to rethink that and get away from the white ball mentality and pick a Test team that is durable, men that can bat for a very long time, and Craig Braffy is one of them, and obviously Kevin Hodges proven in his short career that he's capable of that. So I'm not saying who we should or shouldn't drop at this stage, but for the Test match coming up in New Delhi, which promises to be a flat pitch, I mean, Imlach must play. Imlach must come in as a keeper. That takes me pressure off Hope. That Hope plays the batsman and drop one of the left-arm spinner pair and let Chase boost some more bowling. It's a straight swap.
Sean, Philip, there's been an interesting point where, from his observation, we're taking the T20 mentality into the Test cricket, huh? I think, yeah, it's quite obvious for some to see, huh? So it goes back to my original point about having the same coach for both the T20, the 50 over, and the Test match formats, huh? Now, if you can just rewind slightly, a couple years ago, about 2 years ago, the board opted to split those responsibilities, have separate coaches for the two different, for the different formats, huh? One for red ball, one for white ball. Having now opted to go back to that format, I mean, was that the right decision? As Philip said, given that the mentality has crept in from the shorter formats to the longer format, should we have, you know, separate coaches?
I think you let the results speak. What have the results been like since we've had this change? We're still a dismal Test team. We've lost to Bangladesh. We've lost to Nepal. I do understand the temptation, though, to bring the white ball approach into. I'm not saying I agree with it. I understand it because of the three formats: Test cricket, T20 cricket, and One Day. We're not great at any of them, but I would say T20 will probably be our strongest suit of the three. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think somewhere along the line, what Sammy wanted was for, if it's not Sammy, it's probably captain, for the batsman to show a little bit more intent in Test cricket. You get that from T20 players. So I could understand the logic, I guess, behind pulling players from a team that is more, a format that's more successful. You bring them into Test cricket in the expectation that they would perform like that. But as Philip said, totally different. It's a totally different type of cricket. And Hayden, I just think the cupboard is so bare now that I really don't think it really makes a difference. You bring players from, I don't think it makes that big a difference in terms of the batting. The bowling is fine. I think the bowling in Test cricket is fine.
I'm not meaning to hog the show, but we have the players, you know. We have the players to be one competitive in Test cricket, and we have the players to win Test matches because we have won. We've been competitive in Australia when Shamar turned up. We won the Test match. We hadn't won in years, and we went to Pakistan. We ran them pretty close in the first Test match, and they got away from us to make 2 innings and won the match. But we came back and we won the second Test match. So we have players who can play. I don't think the ability to play is a problem. I think preparation is a big problem. I think if we're not preparing well in the conditions that we're going to face, we're going to be always in trouble. And if England don't prepare well in the conditions that they're going on, they will get beaten in Australia. Yeah, right? New Zealand prepared very well in India last year. They didn't beat them 1-0, they didn't beat them 2-0, they beat them 3-0. They murder India in India. So players can play. They've proven they can play. They haven't proven they can play consistently, but they can play. So we are taking Test matches off people. So if Trinidad is playing Brazil going into a game and you expect 5-0, but if Dwight Yorke comes away with 4-2, he's telling, hang on, look, watch this. We can play. We can take goals off the best team, one of the best teams in the world. Let's see where we go with this from here. I think we not preparing well, one. The regional cricket does not prepare you well, two. And then you shoot yourself in the foot if you're playing people that are not ideally suited to the format. Hodge should be in and around the format. Braffitt should have been kept, in my opinion. Imlach should be the keeper and the Hope plays a batsman if you want to bring back Hope. And I think, this is a personal view that I've shared, so I'm trying to went to Pakistan, that De Silva can play a Test cricket as an opening batsman and solve one of them problems that we got there.
Yeah, John, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on whether you feel that there should be separate coaches for the red ball and the
white ball teams. Absolutely separate them. I think you need to have a very special group of players if you want to have one coach for both, because Philip was speaking a lot about the preparation. You don't get a lot of time in international cricket to prepare. And a lot of nations say that, you know, it's one, sometimes you have one nation playing both formats at the same time. So it's very difficult for a coach to be on top of all the details and get across all of that. And do, and also too, I think you need players good enough to be able to be responsible for their own games and make sure that they're prepared well mentally and physically to go out there and execute their skill sets.
All right, let's now switch to the T20 series against Nepal.
Do we have to?
Here it is. Nepal ranked number 18 in T20s, West Indies ranked number 6. Yet, Nepal stunned West Indies winning the first two matches. West Indies had a consolation win in the last game. Is that a series result, Sean, that you would have expected?
No, definitely not. Even though I heard people saying it was a second string West Indies team, I don't think so. You still had quite a few experienced players in that team. I know the West Indies team in all formats of cricket have struggled with any sort of slow bowling. But still, Nepal rated at 18. They rated at 18 for a reason. I really expected a 3-love, to be honest, or a 2-1 at worst. I didn't see this coming. And to be bowled up for what, it was 80 odd in the second game. I didn't see that coming at all. We had no right, even if you don't have your so-called superstars, our bat team was still good enough to me to beat a team like Nepal.
Philip?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a conversation to be had about the whether we should beat Nepal or not. That's a given, right? But if you look at the track record, if you look at the levels of experience in the two teams, Nepal actually had a more experienced team than us, even though they had an equally youthful team. Because there are five guys in the Nepal team that play over 75 T20 internationals, right? Karan Casey being one of them, Rohit, the captain, being another one of them, and you know, so I took it upon myself before the series. I said I'm going to call Stuart Law and find out from him how he views the series. What does he think is going to happen, and how does he plan to beat the West Indies? Because Nepal were playing to beat us, we were playing for developmental, more or less looking for structure. And Stuart said to me straight, he said, if I make 140 runs, I'm going to win the match. He said, this is a 140 pitch. And if I can get 140 runs, I'm going to win the match. Nepal made over 140 twice and they won twice. So they clearly knew the conditions. They prepared well, preparation again, prepared well within the competition, knew exactly what they were about, and they went ahead and basically what the floor of the West Indies. But the thing with T20 cricket that's interesting, right? It made the margins are smaller. And it brings the teams closer. So there's no real, there's no big gap between teams. Remember in 2016 when we won the World Cup, when Kerala City 4-6s, we lost one game. And that was to Afghanistan, who at the time were minnows. We wiped the floor with England. We slaughtered England the second time in the final. We beat India in the semifinal. We beat the big team, but we lost to Afghanistan because T20, the margins are smaller. And if you blink and you have a bad two or three overs, you could be in trouble. You could fall below the run rate or the run rate get ahead of you and you think. And that's what happened to West Indies in the first match. We were complacent. We obviously didn't think that the score was a challenge and we fell behind the rate. And then by the time we looked around, Jason batting with Akil and it gone. The second game, complacency again. Over pitch bowling in the power play, short pitch bowling in the thing, poor utilization of the resources. The people get a hundred, the bat well, took the partnership was really good. It was a good demonstration of how to bat on the pitch. The people get 170 runs, you can't get them because 140 is par. And West Indies had to know that if they see the score creeping up to 110 for 3 and 4 and it's 14 for 4, well, you're going to pull this thing back. Nobody coming and game gone. And by the time you look around, series gone and embarrassment, you know. So we got to be more mindful. We got to be more mindful of what we're doing. And if we're going to carry a developmental team and the expectations are lower, you communicate that with your fans and your public. Let them know exactly this is what we're going up there for. This is what we're working against and stuff like that. Manage expectation. Don't send greenhorns to fight rhinos. And then when they lose, everybody yelling for murder.
Interesting way to put it. Your thoughts on that series, Dante?
I mean, I kind of expected my teams to lose the series. I gotta be honest.
Expected my teams to
lose? Yeah, I did. And the reason why I did is because I feel like my teams don't do a very good job of integrating young talent into senior squads. You've seen Australia come to the Caribbean and play a couple. I think Owen Mitchell that scored a 50 on debut. Like, you can blood people while playing a good 11 and allow people the chance to taste international cricket while not risking losing. West Indies always play their best 11 in series that they think are must-win games. And then we would do this. We would send an entirely green 11 out there against Nepal, knowing that as a side in any format, we struggle against spin. And then we pick that kind of 11. I was kind of expecting West Indies to lose.
With the benefit of hindsight, there are some people now who are arguing or saying that, you know, we should not have sent a team given the scheduling. So we had the CPL finishing 1 week.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days after, our best team went off to India and a quote-unquote second, but third string team went off to Nepal. With the benefit of hindsight, now, should we have actually sent a team to Nepal given the circumstances?
I was always of the belief that there was nothing to gain from the Nepal series. Because if you lose, you're an embarrassment and you embarrass yourself in front of the world. And if you win, people say, well, it's Nepal. You're supposed to be Nepal. So I never thought there was anything to gain from the series. I guess the guys who did go, who shone in CPL and whatever, would have taken heart from it or taken some experience from it. But for me personally, I wouldn't have organized the series from the start. There was nothing to gain from it for me.
Your thoughts, Jean?
I think this series is more beneficial to Nepal than it was to the West Indies. I remember very vividly at the end of the third match, the commentators were talking about how grateful Nepal was for a long West Indies to come. And that's exactly what happened. I believe Nepal, in beating a higher ranked team, they would move up the rankings for sure. The expectation was that it was an opportunity to blood some young T20 West Indies players, and what better way to do it than against a minnow? I think that was the thinking, but things didn't quite work out. I still expected West Indies to win that series, to be honest.
If you look to the future, after India, we have series kind of against Bangladesh, New Zealand, South Africa. Down the road, is there any optimism as we look to the future for that?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to Bangladesh to play them, and on turning pitches, slower turners. Shea Hope most likely will play in those white ball series. He's a tremendous white ball batsman, probably the most dominant wicketkeeper batsman in 50 over history. I mean, this guy has got 1900s in 150 games, keeping wicket. That's phenomenal. That's absolutely phenomenal. Now, MS Dhoni, Gilchrist, Alex Stewart, Sangakkara, they don't have those numbers. I think the only keeper in history that's averaged 50 is Dhoni and Shea Hope, and Dhoni back down, Shea Hope by top. So facing the newish ball, possibly getting nick off and all that kind of thing, LB balls coming back, to have that sort of record, Shea Hope is absolutely phenomenal. He does not get the credit he deserves. He's got the same amount of hundreds of Desmond Haynes in fewer matches. And we know what Desmond Haynes was in 50-over cricket. Shea Hope is absolutely phenomenal. I expect him to do well and carry the brunt of the batting in Bangladesh. It will turn, so you ain't going to get no 300 and no 320. You're probably going to get 240s and battle it out. So they got a plan accordingly, as I said. They'll be spin-friendly, so if you carry your spinners, Akhil, Moti, and one other, maybe the McPick, Badesi, as a leg spinner, introduce him again and thing. And I think Badesi did well in Nepal, so there's opportunity that was taken. Sure. And now you can see who you've got going forward. Ford hopefully will be back from his injury. He's a key man in thing. Ford would have done well in Nepal, I believe. He probably might even have been moved up to the test team when the two Josephs were pulled out, you know. So opportunities exist, and we have to build. We have to build towards the T20 World Cup next year. You don't want another situation where you either can't get any second rung or you mess it up. We won in 2012 in Sri Lanka. We won in 2016 in India. The next World Cup is in Sri Lanka and India. So we know how to win in these two areas. And obviously, slow bowling is going to be crucial. Chase is another good all-rounder in white ball cricket. I expect Chase to do well in them conditions. He can get more bowling, and he probably get the opportunity to bat in a decent batting position and get some runs. So we should hold our own in Bangladesh. But we got to be mindful of preparation for T20 World Cup, and then we must get some points for the next 50 over World Cup that's coming up, because qualification ends at, there's a finite point at which you got to qualify, and if you don't qualify, you don't make the World Cup. We saw what happened in 2023 when everybody heard of a murder. We belly the herd in here. Sami Kerr team to Zimbabwe, Jason Boley Super Bowl, and the men like off your runs. You don't want that. You don't want that again. You got to get them points and qualify for the next 50 over World Cup.
Sean, is there any optimism for the immediate future?
With this West Indies team, it's really hard to say. As West Indians, we would like that. I would like for West Indies to win most of the games going forward. I don't see it. I don't see it happening anytime soon. When I look at the average age, so you want to go back to the Test cricket, or are you speaking specifically T20 West Indies brand? I mean the batsmen play to their averages. All of them. The only person I think that was averaging over 30 was probably Shander Paul. But I think the batsmen played to their averages. They're all averaging in the 20s. You get that from John Campbell. You get that from the others. So I think, I don't see any immediate recovery. Philip said we do have a lot of good players around the region. What I would like to see in closing is I would like to see, along with preparation and the facilities that Ross and Chase spoke about, is better coaching at junior levels. Don't wait until you get to the senior level to find the best coaches. I think we need to have our better coaches at the school level and so on. We've not had Herman Griffith cricket in Barbados for a little while. So you understand what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, but coaching as is facilitated now is not gonna get you world class players. If you're gonna coach in, if you think that under 19 cricket is youth cricket, you're fooling yourself. At 19 years old, guys are scoring hat tricks in the Premier League.
Mm.
At 19 years old, guys are starting for Germany in the World Cup qualifiers. 19 is a big man in sport.
Right.
Right? Nobody at 19 ain't going in no academy and nothing. You're coming out of the academy at 17.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're serious, right, about coaching cricket in the Caribbean, we need a mindset shift. You got to identify children at 6 and 7. And the first thing you got to do is teach them how to run and run and train like an athlete. So develop the athlete from between the 7 and 9, and then use the cricket coaching skills between 9 and 15. At 16, you must be ready to play first class cricket.
Yeah.
Not now coming into the under 19 team and hoping that somebody see you and think you've got a talent and put you in the bin 10 or the Legends Cup.
Yeah.
So our coaching mentality got to change. I mean, Newcastle is a middle table Premier League team. Newcastle has one of the best run under nines program in England, and Newcastle produce talent, and then talent goes wherever it wants to go according to the market.
But that's why you reference the Herman Griffith
age. Yeah, well, Herman Griffith is recreational and enjoyment, but you've got to be targeting talent the same way you do your CXCs. At 16, and you become you get your degree at 19 and 21,
right?
And you go to work, you got to be ready to go to work at 19 and 21, not be going in the academy at 19 and 21.
Yeah.
So, our model needs to change reflective of modern best practice.
Mm-hmm.
And at what age does a sportsman mature ready to perform at the highest level?
We can have a 14 year old in the IPL scoring
this year. And Lima, how old is Yamal at Barcelona?
I think 18 or 19, something like that,
John, you have the final word. Any optimism for the immediate future?
Not in the red ball team. The red ball team will continue to struggle, I'm sorry. Because we just don't have the red ball players, in my opinion. I know Philip thinks we do, or good enough, but I don't. So I think we will struggle there. But I think the one-day team will qualify for the World Cup. I'm optimistic about that. I think we have enough players. And I think with Shehok playing the way he does, I think he can carry this side. So I am optimistic about that. But the rebel fortunes will continue to be as they are.
I want to make one final point here, and sorry to interject. I think I grew up on a heavy diet of cricket. And when I say heavy diet of cricket, I don't only mean watching cricket and enjoying cricket. I mean a heavy diet of cricket as a cultural, as something of cultural and national significance. And cricket is not a game. in the West Indies. It is not a sport. Cricket isn't. Cricket has always been and remains a central point of who we are as a people and as a region, a hugely unifying force that is a global brand, right? We are a global sporting, the global sporting brand, and as you've seen, there's Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce, there was Hazy Crawford and Atto Bolden and Dion Hemmings and them in the track and field. But cricket is more than a sport. So when people talk about cricket and how do we get better, we got to understand that this thing is something that is a something of global significance, a huge significance, right? When we win the whole players mash up. When we lose, the whole players mash up too, but in a different kind of way. So let's not just Mickey Mouse with cricket and call it this and only look at wins, losses, and draws. Let's see this thing as a something of such huge significance that it affects our psyche, right? People, John, you were born in Britain, your parents will tell you, winning and losing in the 70s, 80s, and 90s was a huge thing. And we know it. We've traveled covering sport, cricket, and stuff like that. We know how it works, right? The heroes in airports. When you go to Trinidad Airport, you see Lara, right? The streets named after these men. They got the Shander Paul Street in Guyana and the Lance Gibbs. I think Darren Sammy Stadium, the Richard Stadium. National monuments are named after cricketers. Jamaica is yet to name something after Usain Bolt, a stadium after Usain Bolt, but other countries have named monuments and stadiums after cricketers. So this cricket thing is a tangible, meaningful, cohesive organism in the Caribbean. It's a standard for which we are judged. So players need to understand that. Administrators, more than anybody else, also need to understand that. And we need to find a way as a cricket fraternity, because we are all part of it, as to get our people to understand it as well. Right. Not a debate for another day.
For sure.
Okay, so gentlemen, we've certainly had a very robust discussion on the subject of West Indies cricket. We want you, the fans, to also weigh in on the subject. You can send us your comments on all of our online platforms. You can follow us on our website, YouTube, and Spotify. On behalf of Philip Spooner, Sean Green, and Jonte Coppin, I'm Hayden Gill, signing off from the Writers' Roundtable.